Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So even the cool kids want to be involved in climate activism. Or maybe climate activism is redefining what it means to be cool. In the halls of Congress and in many newsrooms, there are other less existential concerns, and they fill the political ether with mixed and misleading messages. Leah Stokes is a professor at the University of California at Santa Barbara, where she studies public opinion and political behavior with a focus on energy and climate change. Last year, she co-authored a study that told us what you might have already suspected. Congress has no clue what Americans want.
So these are the chiefs of staff and legislative directors in Congress, the people who help their bosses decide how to vote on a bill. And we asked them, what do you think the public wants on climate action? And they dramatically underestimated the public support that's out there for acting on the climate crisis.
92% of the staff members that you surveyed underestimated the support in their district or state, including all Republican aides and over 85% of the Democratic aides.
And we actually show the more those offices are meeting with the American Petroleum Institute, which is the Association of Fossil Fuel Companies, and the more they're taking money from them relative to meeting with, let's say, environmental groups like the Sierra Club, the worse job they do at guessing public opinion. So it seems like interest groups who are allied with fossil fuels are kind of driving a wedge between what the public wants on climate change and what our politicians and their staff think that the public wants. Research done by the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication, which I am affiliated with, they make these maps and they look at all these different policy areas and show what the public wants. And the media has had a narrative, and politicians have had this narrative too, that the public doesn't really care about climate change. It's not really an important issue. And if you just go look at these amazing maps, you can see that that's just not true. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they've just put out a new map about the proportion of people who think that fossil fuel companies should have to pay for the harms that they are already causing. 57% of Americans, a majority of Americans, support that. And then you can actually zoom into every single congressional district and figure out, for example, across Arizona, a relatively conservative state, people support that. Across New Mexico, they do.
Why do you think the public feels this way in the absence of support from their politicians and their media?
Support for climate action has been high for a long time, but in the past 9 months, we've seen a huge surge, something like 10 percentage points more people are worried about this. This reflects a number of things. First, last fall, we had the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, report come out, which really showed that we have to make dramatic strides to cut our emissions.
And I think that's very sobering, but stuff that the UN does never seems to make much of a dent on the mainstream American public.
I would agree, but somehow this report broke through.
There is a new report out about climate change, and it is not positive.
And I think actually journalists had a role in that. Somebody picked up that report and framed it around, we have 12 years left.
The world has just 12 years to stop a climate change catastrophe.
So that gives us 12 years to make sure that the temperature doesn't
A little more increase. Than a decade to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide released into the
world
atmosphere.
Is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. And your biggest issue is... Your biggest issue is how are we going to pay for it?
12 years is not a long period of time.
That's not in the report. That was a media decision. And then the Sunrise Movement picked it up. And a lot of scientists actually have gotten very upset about the 12-year framing. But from a media and communication perspective, it's genius because
it
gives people... We have 11 years to cut emissions by about half. That is what the report says.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is true that there is a clock ticking and we've already warmed the planet by 1 degree Celsius. And if we want to reduce it or limit it to 1.5 degrees Celsius, there's a timeline. Of course, if we don't meet that target, it's not like the world explodes on the first day of 2031. And then the other thing I would say that has begun to break through is climate impacts are actually happening.
California is burning on both ends, decimating an entire town called Paradise.
Coverage of the damage caused by Michael, the Category 4 storm, was the most powerful hurricane on record to hit Florida's panhandle.
Imelda first striking Freeport, Texas. Some areas could see upwards of 18 inches of rain.
And the media has not done a great job of linking people's lived experiences to climate change, but that is starting to catch hold.
For a long time, scientists said that it wasn't wise to attribute the cause of any particular weather event to climate change. Weather was too complex for that. But attribution science, as it's called, has gotten a lot better, right? It's now possible to connect the dots between some instances of extreme weather and climate change.
Public Citizen, this NGO, wrote a report that showed that only one in five articles that talk about heat waves even mention climate change at all. Heat waves are the most easy to attribute to climate change. Every time I open up an article, I look for climate and I look for global warming, and I usually come up empty-handed.
Leah, why do you think that is? Is it still regarded as a political issue and it's a question of perceived balance?
Climate change is actually the most polarized public policy issue in the United States because of the denial campaign that the fossil fuel industry has run for over 40 years. And journalists, they don't want to make mistakes. And I really value that. But that's making them kind of fearful about linking things to climate change that really should be linked. Mm-hmm. I have been working on a project with a student, Emily Williams, and with the website Climate Signals to try to take the science that is being published in academic journals, often behind paywalls, and get open access versions so that journalists can easily find the article that shows empirically that, yes, you can link this event to climate change.
I was really struck by this study this month from the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication, and it said 7 in 10 registered Iowa voters support government action to address climate change. 77% of Iowa voters are more likely to support candidates who favor increased funding for renewables.
That's a really consistent finding over the past 6 months, showing that primary voters are going to vote based on this issue. And there were several polls coming out a few months ago that said it was the number one issue, even above health care and immigration. And let's not forget, we have the climate denier in chief in the White House.
Just announcing that he's revoking California's power to set its own vehicle emission standards.
California reached a deal with four automakers in July to reduce emissions by 3.7% every year.
Well, if feds are going after the car makers that signed a deal with California on emission standards.
I think him rolling back environmental policies has woken up a lot of people to the consequences.
But it sounds like what you're suggesting is that the biggest mind changer is lived experience. Even if those congressional aides who find themselves surrounded by the arguments of lobbyists might have a change of heart if they had a personal experience of extreme weather.
The research so far is showing that when people believe in climate change and they experience extreme weather, they become more active. So right now that's Democrats and maybe some young Republicans. But if you don't think climate change is real and happening, then you're not going to connect the extreme weather back to action on the part of the government.
So we don't know for sure that lived experience will do it. But one of our producers found a story in Harper's earlier this year with an anecdote that I just loved. It was about the environmental legacy of the New Deal. And the head of the Soil Conservation Service, a man named Big Hugh Bennett, he was preparing to testify before the Congress on the need for a new agency. And then he got wind of a dust storm that was headed to Washington, and he stalled his conclusion until the storm arrived. Here's the quote from Harper's. As he finished, the congressman rushed to the windows of the Capitol, watching as the duster rolled in like a vast steel town pall, thick and repulsive. The skies took on a copper color. The sun went into hiding. The air became heavy with grit. This, gentlemen, is what I'm talking about, Bennett told them. There goes Oklahoma.
I love it. Well, we had a nice moment like that with the CNN climate town hall because Hurricane Dorian was bearing down on the country.
We're seeing firsthand the effects of climate change as a powerful Atlantic hurricane is sitting right now off the coast of Florida. It could make landfall tomorrow in South Carolina. Tonight, Democratic and independent voters will be asking the questions live here in our audience and also by video.
What do you think of the coverage of the various climate proposals from the candidates?
Let's just go through one of the issues in these plans. How fast do you want to hit net zero emissions? Elizabeth Warren says, I can do it by 2030. 2045 is the target for Cory Booker, Julian Castro, and Kamala Harris. 2049 is Andrew Yang's number. 2050 is what Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, Bernie Sanders, and Pete Buttigieg says. Are there voters out there who are going to say, aha, I'm for Warren because she gets there quicker?
Yeah,
or is it just you have to have a plan?
Many journalists call me up and they say, oh, look, all these plans are the same. If you contrast the Sanders plan with Warren's plan, which was based off of Jay Inslee's plan when he was in the race, what we're actually talking about is Sanders takes nuclear off the table. He says, we're not going to use that and we're going to have 100% renewable energy by 2030. Warren, by contrast, says, we're going to keep stuff on the table and we're going to have 100% clean energy by 2035. Let's be clear that these are both really Herculean goals. And Biden's goal, by contrast, is by 2050, so a lot further in the future. Actually, Bernie Sanders' plan is 50% harder on an annual basis than Elizabeth Warren's plan.
What do you mean harder?
I mean that you must be deploying new technology at a rate that is 50% higher every single year. And just to be clear, the Warren plan says that we're going to deploy at 17 times current deployment rates. Bernie Sanders' plan is we're going to deploy at 25 times current deployment rates. So both of them are ramping things up on a huge scale. And I think the media doesn't understand that these words on paper that have technologies that are eligible, that have targets and timetables, would really change the landscape of America in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, Leah, could you read a quote that you brought to our attention from Thomas Edison?
Yes, this is from over 100 years ago. And he said, the scheme of combustion to get power makes me sick to think of. It is so wasteful. You see, we should utilize natural forces and thus get all of our power. Sunshine is a form of energy, and the winds and the tides are manifestation of energy. Do we use them? Oh, no. We burn up wood and coal as renters burn up the front fence for fuel. We live like squatters, not as if we owned the property.
How'd you feel when you came upon that?
I felt that we have lost so much time to denial campaigns from the fossil fuel industry, and we must start to turn the tide, and the fossil fuel era must end.
Leah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Leah Stokes of the University of California at Santa Barbara. Her upcoming book is Short-Circuiting Policy, Interest Groups and the Battle Over Clean Energy and Climate Policy in the American States.
We're coming down to the ground. There's no better place to come. We got snow upon the mountains. We got rivers down below. We're coming down to the ground. We hear the birds sing in the trees. And the land will be looked after.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asa Chaturvedi. We had more help from Charlotte Gartenberg. Special thanks to Andy Lancet, Archives Czar at WNYC. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.